You're listening to The Dan Nichols Show.
On The Dan Nichols Show this week, a good friend of mine, someone I've known for some time, and someone who, if you'd asked me 10 years ago, why would you be having him on The Dan Nichols Show? I would have told you, well, he's just won his first major, he now owns his own jet, and he is the biggest superstar in world golf. He hasn't won a major, he doesn't have his own jet, at least neither of those just yet, but he's arguably got a reason to be far happier than if either of those had come across his horizon. Because the story of Merrick Bremner is one that might elicit a tear or two. I'm going to try very hard to be emotionally strong this show, but it also puts a big smile on your face because there is a fairy tale ending for now and possibly some more golf fairy tale to come. It's a story I've been wanting to share for a little while, and I'm very grateful he has made his way in. Merrick Bremner, welcome.
Thanks, Dan. Thanks for having me.
I was thinking back earlier for the very first time we met. This is going back, probably close on 20 years or thereabouts, the Sunshine Tour. And there was this young kid called Merrick who had a big smile on his face, wandered up, didn't always look terribly focused, just had a big smile, and then would settle down on the first tee and hit his driver about 400 yards. And then everybody knew, here is somebody who means business. And that was the Merrick who first crossed my path. And that was, I think, safe to say, a very different Merrick to the Merrick we have today, because you've been through so much since then. But I would like to give people who don't know the Merrick Bremner backstory a bit of that, about finding your way into golf and deciding that, you know what, professional golf is something I think I can have a crack at.
Yeah, definitely. I think a lot has evolved in me as a person since then. I wish a lot of it could have stayed, especially the length. You know, it's a pity the older you get, the shorter you hit it. But yeah, I think there was a lot of bravado back then. It was more brute than anything else, and I think I've kind of learned a bit of tact. It hasn't proved to come into fruition and produce as many trophies as I would have liked, but I'm happy with where I'm at the moment.
When you started, it's always a very exciting time. Here's a young golfing talent. You've come through the ranks. People are whispering your name. You win some junior events. You stand out. But you're often, in fairness, a very big fish in a relatively small pond as you come through. And as you start rising through the ranks, you realize, well, actually, there's some other guys who can hit it as far as I can. And there is a lot there. What were those early days like and making that decision to try out professional golf?
It was actually quite weird. So my first taste of professional golf, the Q School happened to be at my home club at the time, and I was 19. And I was like, well, I'll just give it a shot to see and like try and test my ability against some of the guys that were trying to get their card. None of my mates or other guys that I knew were going. So I entered, and on the morning of the first round, I think it was Dornay, who was the secretary at the time, she said to me, are you entering as an amateur or as a professional? And I looked at it and I was like, well, what's the difference? She's like, well, if you enter as a pro, you can win money. So like, well, then I enter me as a pro.
That's a simple one then.
Yeah, so I entered as a pro and I actually won that Q School by a shot. And then I got my first taste of professional victory. Like I made some money. I went and spent it in one night with all my mates and the rest is history, basically.
How surprised were you to win that? How surprised were your family, your peers were that you won that?
I don't think I was too surprised. Obviously, being my home course, it was quite easy, you know. Like, I just knew that I needed to shoot 4 or 5 under each day and I'd have a really good chance. And luckily, I managed to do that. I think I got to 19 or 20 under in 4 rounds and won by a shot. So,
but the way you say that so casually, I just need to make 4 or 5 under, 20 under for the tournament, that'll do me. If I'm 20 over in 1 round, I'm not too disappointed.
Yeah, look, I mean, a lot has changed. Like I said, I wish those scores would be as simple as I say them now, you know. But yeah, at the time it came easy because it was just for the love of golf. You just go out there and play and it came so naturally and it was just simple.
You win Q School. There's a certain amount of expectation that comes with that. You've got that first taste of victory. What were the next few years like?
I'll tell you, the next few weeks were quite tough because I thought it was all glitz and glamour. You know, you win Q School and then you'd get into tournaments and things. Not for me. I had to go and pre-qualify for the Polokwane Classic the following week. So, yeah, it was quite difficult having a perception of what you should have got into and whatnot, and it didn't happen that way. I ended up having to play 12, I think it was 6 or 12 events because I qualified in November and the season ran till March. And then there were only a few summer events. I didn't know it at the time. I thought I'd have a full year. And ended up losing my card by 100 rand that season. So back to Q School the following March and then got it and then progressed from there. So it wasn't all as glamorous as I'm making it to seem, but no, it was good fun. It was a good learning curve. And obviously you learn every time, you know, if you qualify for an event and you miss the cut by a shot or you make it by a shot, everything's a learning process.
That is brutal, though, to lose it by 100 rand.
Yeah, I think it was 110. But yeah, it was tough. It was a tough pill to swallow.
You had, though, got a feel for the space, and you knew this is where you wanted to be and this is where you wanted to do. And the golf career was unfolding. You were catching a lot of attention. You were playing some great golf. At what point in this golf journey did a rather eye-catching young lady called Pavesh come across your horizon?
2008, I would say, maybe late 2007, early 2008. I actually studied with her brother. And for 2 years, we like spent playing golf and having brides and things. Never knew you had a sister. She was overseas in America doing some work as an au pair. And one day at the house, I saw a photograph of her. And I just asked, like, who's that? And he's like, that's my sister. And none of my friends date my sister. I was like, okay, I don't even know this person, but chill. And then eventually she came back and we met, and it was, the rest is history.
Was it love at first sight?
And for her, I think. No,
I'd be interested to see what she said if I asked her the same question.
No, it was definitely for me. I won't tell you what happened the first night we met, but it wasn't good for me. It was terrible. It was a bad first impression, and I'm surprised that she still ended up with me.
What was her brother's response?
We had a very long chat at Benoni Lake Golf Club behind the 18th green, and I said to him, look, you've got a very difficult decision to make. You're either going to have to make an exception to your rule of your friends don't date your sister, or you don't longer have a friend. So he made an exception to his rule.
He made the right call. So love blossoms, romance falls into place. And in fact, I remember, and I'm very sad that I wasn't able to, I remember you giving me a call to ask if I'd come and emcee your wedding. And sadly, I was away. But by all accounts, it was a glorious occasion. And two love-struck young people who were now on this great journey together. Merrick, the exciting young golfer, found true love, family beginning. And then the story takes a slightly unexpected turn. And it's one that you couldn't have seen coming, and it's one you wouldn't wish on anyone, as you discovered there was a kidney issue, and it wasn't just fleeting, well, we'll nip down to the doctor, get some medicine, and we'll all be fine next week.
Yeah, no. So I knew things were kind of getting serious between Pavesh and I when I proposed in Mauritius, and I was like, well, look, this is the woman I want to spend the rest of my life with. So proposed, she said yes, thankfully. And then obviously we started making plans for the wedding and started considering the option of having children. And she would always have the odd like bladder or kidney infection. So I didn't know too much about it at the time, to being a golfer. So she went to a specialist to go and have a look and see like what the root cause could be. And he couldn't really figure it out, but he did say that she had slightly small kidneys. So he assumed that she was born with small kidneys that just didn't fully develop. No wrongdoing by her or anything like that. She just got a short straw, got small kidneys. And with kidneys being a filtration system, they just deteriorate over time, where you and I might have big kidneys that will deteriorate much later on in life. Hopefully we'll be gone by the time our kidneys deteriorate. But yeah, so she just, unfortunately, that process was brought forward for her because of the size of her kidneys. And we literally only found out the extensivity of her problem when she was pregnant with our son Max, because when the ladies fall pregnant, they have increased blood flow through their internal organs. So it gave us a false hope. Her kidney function actually went up in the first and second trimester, and then in the third trimester, because of the size of the baby, it put pressure on the stuff on the inside, and then it started dropping. And when she gave birth to Max, it slowly started going down and down and down, and her nephrologist said to her, look, we basically just need to try and buy time. It's inevitable what's going to happen. You either need a transplant or you're going to end up on dialysis. It's just one of those things. And so that process started, and he did a great job. 5 years, I think he kept her off dialysis, but it was always going to be either transplant or dialysis. And then another curveball came. in Mauritius. We were actually on holiday with the whole family. My father-in-law took us on holiday. And he called and he said, look, your blood results have just come in. When are you back from holiday? And it was the following week. And he said, look, you need to go and see a vascular surgeon and get a fistula done in your left forearm. And you need to decide whether you're going to do PD dialysis, which is through your stomach, or you're going to do hemo through your arm. And she said, well, it's going to be hemodialysis. So they put a perm cath in her chest and did the thing in her arm. I broke down. It wasn't great. Obviously, like seeing the love of your life and the mother of your child go through something and know that you basically can't do anything about it. So we then asked family, her family, to see if there's any blood matches. Obviously, that's what the government and the doctors want. They say if you can have a relative donate, it's better than a stranger. So ask everyone. It's a very difficult question to ask people, I think, especially family. She found it quite tough. I did as well. So we asked. One of her cousins actually offered and went through a lot of the tests, and he was excluded for whatever reason. And then I put my hand up and said, look, I'm going to give it a go. They wouldn't let me test at the same time. Unfortunately, in our country, you can only do one at a time. So once one donor is excluded, then the next one can start. So the previous donor's process took about 18 months. And by that time, she was on dialysis already. And then I found out that I was a match.
That's so much to go through in such a short space of time, from the absolute high of she said yes, thank God, to right, we're going to get married. And now we've got a little one on the way. You become a parent as well as recently becoming a husband. And now suddenly your best friend, your wife, the person who now along with your son means the most to you in the world, has got this challenge, which I would know nothing about this if somebody told me that had happened to somebody in my close circle. That just absolute wave of how do I take everything on? And between all of that, you're also supposed to be trying to be the next best thing in South African golf. How overwhelming was it? How did you somehow hang on to a shred of hope, a shred of reality?
So the difficulty with golf is you spend a lot of time away from home. So you got to be selfish in that sense. And I find it very difficult to be selfish knowing what she's going through at home with a small baby. So that year on the European tour was quite difficult. I spent most Sundays flying home and most Tuesdays flying back to Europe because I had a conditional status. So I didn't get into tournaments as regularly as I anticipated. So planning was very difficult. So I spent a lot of time traveling. You know how difficult that can be. And then, I don't know, like you kind of just plod along. You try and do what you can to support your family because you can't stop, right? So you still need to make money somehow. Thankfully, I had some amazing sponsors along the way to kind of make the load a little bit lighter. But I don't know. It's an unanswerable question.
Were there times when it did just genuinely all seem a bit too much?
Yeah, recently, like the last, I'd say probably 3 years. Just leading up to the kidney donation, going through the process, every time we got to a certain point and we thought, okay, we're going to plan for this month, then something would happen. They would need another test result to be updated, or this wasn't correct, or the doctor wasn't available on that date. And it's just like you're trying so hard and you can't put your career on hold. You know, like with golf, you try and plan a schedule and there's certain times where you can take time off. And if you don't, then you're going to miss a bunch of really important tournaments. And eventually I just got to the point where I was like, bugger it. If it comes in December, then that's just unfortunately that's when it's going to come, you know. And luckily it worked out perfectly. It came in June. But I don't know, like the planning and not knowing when it's out of your control, it was extremely, extremely difficult.
You get through this donor process. You've had the cousin try it, hasn't worked out. And now you do. What are the feelings when that comes about? Because on one hand, you have got the power to hopefully help the person who you want to help, well, anybody else in the world. But this is also not a small procedure, not a small process to go through. Look, I'm not a terribly courageous person. I would have been terrified beyond belief. What was your response to finding out that now you are more than ever before the one?
So I can tell you this is in the top three most memorable days of my life, finding out that I'm a match and one, I can do it. The second one was the birth of our son, and the third getting married to Pavesh. So those are top three. The golf tournaments are all far behind that. But
so Dan Nichols show only comes in at number four. It's yeah, a little disappointing.
Dan Nichols fourth. Then the tournament's five, six, seven, and so on. No, honestly, Dan, like the emotion that I felt knowing that like my life's purpose is more than just being a golfer. And I was able to potentially save someone's life. Because we didn't know it was going to be a success at the time. Obviously, when you go through all the testing processes and things with these specialist doctors and surgeons and things, they have to tell you all the risks that are involved in the surgery. And listen.
And that's when it gets very real very quickly.
Yeah, yeah. Like I was all brave. You know, like the 19-year-old Merrick being a golfer bombing, it's just like nonchalant. Oh, whatever, I'll do it. You like that until they tell you, listen, there's a really big chance that this can go wrong. Like, yes, it is 2025 and modern medicine is great, but there's still risks involved. You can die, the kidney can not work, it can reject, she can die. It's real. It was hectic. And then I still said to her, look, we're doing this. I need to do this for you and for myself and for Max because we need her.
And also at a purely functional level, the period leading up to this with dialysis, that was, I think I remember you telling me, you kind of up at 4:30 in the morning and driving off and having to work this crazy mad schedule around golf and parenting and dialysis and seeing your best friend going through this extraordinary challenge.
Yeah, so I've never been on dialysis, but I've witnessed people on dialysis and I don't wish that upon anyone. The way the doctors explain it, it's like running a marathon whilst lying in a bed or sitting in a chair. Your blood's racing. It's getting rinsed through a machine, worked back into your body, and the process just goes on and on for however long they sit. Sometimes 3.5, sometimes 4 hours, depending on what they need, what numbers they need. So I saw that. And it's not as easy as going for a cup of coffee. You know, they've got plans. So they've got a 6 o'clock shift, an 11 or a 4. You can kind of fit in. And if there's people that have been in there longer than you have, then your preference isn't really there. So you're not going to get the slots that you want. So we got, unfortunately, the really early ones. And it was hard, you know. I didn't want her to walk that journey on her own because she had walked mine with me. You know, she had been there through every win, every miscut, every celebration, every crying session, whatever it was, she was there. So I was like, well, I need to be there for her. I'm not going to let her go and lie on this machine on her own. And I drove her there. Then she said to me, look, instead of sitting here, what are you doing? Go and practice and then come back, pick me up, and then we'll go home or pick up Max or do whatever. But I found it extremely tough, like getting her there, making sure everything's okay, then go to golf and practice for like 2.5 hours. Then pick her up, then hang around for like 1.5 hours to pick up Max, then go home. And by the time I got him home, she was either helping with homework or making lunch or whatever. And then
but probably also shattered after.
Yeah, she was for the most part. Well, she got used to it after some time, but in the beginning it was tough. She would come home and she'd be like lethargic and she'd sleep a bit. But she was amazing. She was a soldier. She still is. She didn't want to just lie down and sleep. You know, she would soldier on. And it was hard. I promise you, it's not the easiest thing that we've ever done, but I'm glad that we are where we are now, and all these things happen for a reason. So,
tell me about the actual process. So you've found out, right, you can deliver this potentially life-saving solution to this challenge. You've had the doctors run through the 800 things that can possibly go wrong and have now properly put the wind up you around this. But nope, you're going to go through this. You're going to make it happen. What was the day like building up, going through that process and getting it done?
So I'm sure you'll know me. I just need to tell you this. I've always looked at the cup half full rather than half empty. So whilst all these doctors were telling me everything that can go wrong, and I kept reminding them about everything that can
go right.
I said, yes, I could die, but I could save her life as well. That's something that you're forgetting. And that's the only thing that I thought about. And I kept telling Pavesh as well, even when we lay in hospital on the morning of our transplant. She's going, oh, I'm so worried. What if it doesn't work? And I said to her, okay, what if it does work? Then the anesthetist came. He said to me, look, I'm going to give you a Dormican. You're probably going to feel a little bit tired. And then we'll see you when you come out of theater. I said to him, okay, I'm ready. took the tablet, looked at Pervez, passed out in about 15 seconds. And then the next thing I knew, I woke up and felt a little bit of pain, not much. But, I mean, it was just more uncomfortable because I wasn't sure, like, what was going on. And the first day was okay because I had some really nice pain medication. The second day was hot. It was really sore. And then, yeah, I asked all the doctors on the first day, like, what's the best way to do this? And they said, look, the sooner you get up and start walking and things, the better you'll be. So day two, the nurse came in. I said, please remove the catheter. And they said, but you haven't walked yet. I said, okay, but then this is going to give me reason to walk, right? So take it out. So then they took it out. And then I said, I need to pee. It was hard. Like, it was sore. They cut straight through the middle. So, like, bending, getting up out of bed wasn't easy. But we did it and took a walk to go see Pervez. She was two doors down.
I had her process. Did these procedures happen at the same time?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, they say yes, but then there was a young boy that came in that needed a liver transplant. Not from me, thankfully, or not that I know of. No, so then they kind of squeezed him in, but my nephrectomy was already happening. So it was supposed to happen, like mine would come out and then Pervez would be wheeled into theatre and probably like an hour later they would start putting it in. But it didn't quite happen that way. I think mine came out and then 4 or 5 hours went by and then hers went in. So she actually saw me come out of theatre before she went in. So she kind of knew. So she was at peace as well, knowing that I'm okay.
So far, so good at that point. And when do you know? I know it's not the exact process. Ah, right, we've hit 3 o'clock, everything's fine. But at what stage are they able to say to you, you know what, it's taken, it's looking good, we think you're out of the woods?
So I'm not too sure, but from what I've heard and what I've asked questions to all the doctors and specialists, she'll never, ever, her body will never own it as her own because it's a foreign organ. So she'll have to take anti-rejection medication for the rest of her life. They'll just monitor the amount.
That was me at university, so tell her you can get through it.
Like I said to her, Dan, a tablet is much better to take than to lie on a machine. So if 100%. You only have to take a couple of tablets twice a day or whatever, that's way better. But yeah, so they're monitoring it now with blood tests and things they do. In the early stages, they're doing every week. Now then they move to every 2 weeks, now every month, and now I think it's every 2 months. But they're happy. It's stable. Her results are really good. She went from having basically zero kidney function to like mid-80s, which is great.
That's extraordinary.
So we're really stoked.
Oh, that's brilliant. How long has that been now since that process?
So June 10, we did the donation or the transplant. So what is that? Just over 5 months,
five,
I think.
5.5 months. Mm. That's remarkable. And to go through that journey together, all married couples have different challenges, different paths. But to have that, it's a quite unique bond, and it's something, thankfully, very few people ever have to share. But I think there is so much positive you can take out of that.
No, definitely. I mean, like I said to her, I think I said it to you on the flight when we spoke, it's one small thing that I can do to repay her for all the time, blood, sweat, and tears she's put into my career and heartache that I've made her endure. So, yeah, I mean, it's just I'm just extremely grateful and thankful that I was a match and I was able to do what I did.
And when you look back, suddenly missing out by 110 rand on keeping your card doesn't seem quite that important.
No, definitely not. And, I mean, when you see the joy in your son's eyes when he gets to see his mom fit and healthy again, that's the true bonus.
You can't equate anything to that. Mm-hmm. Is Max old enough now to kind of understand what has happened?
Yeah, so I think so. He'll be 10 at the end of this month. So I don't really know what he does know and he doesn't, but he doesn't let on too much. But I know that he was super happy when when the doctors were happy and said, like, look, mommy's got a working kidney now and everything should be okay. He was happy.
If you never made another cut again, you would still have so much reason to celebrate. But I know that's not going to be the case because you are far too good a golfer for that ever to happen. What has the golf journey been like since then, both from a physical perspective, because it's not a small operation to go through, but also from the reshift mentally of, okay, there are now some very different parameters to the life that I lead.
Yeah, look, I mean, my return to golf hasn't been glamorous. I've played pretty poorly, but I mean, I had 4 months with basically no golf. 3 months, no golf whatsoever, and then started getting back into it, doing some short game and putting and hitting. And the itch, I had to just scratch it. You know, I probably wasn't ready to come back when I came back, but not ready to compete. I mean, I was ready to play. I mean, I'm healthy, I'm fine, there's nothing wrong. I just don't think I was ready to compete. But I'm glad that I came back, and it's the same as I dove in when I was younger, you know, just go and see. Like, what's the point sitting and waiting? Just let's get on with it and see. And every week's gotten progressively better. So I started off in the 80s and now I'm in the 70s and hopefully we'll work our way back into the 60s. But I'm on a good path at the moment. Mentally, I'm much better. I know that my family's in a good space. So at least that gives me a bit of freedom when I'm on the course.
It's both the joy and the curse of the game of golf. And more so for people like me than for people like you, that if I'm standing over a 200-yard shot and I know that 11 years ago I once hit that shot to 4 feet, I think I can do it every time. You are returning to a game that you have played at the very highest level of. You've flourished on the DP World Tour. You've done particularly well over the years on the Sunshine Tour. So you know that Merrick Bremner has got that game. How much of a drive is that? How much do those memories keep your drive alive?
They definitely do keep it alive, but they also hurt, as you say, you know, because when you don't pull it off or when you miss that putt from 5 foot or whatever, it hurts, you know. So, but it also wants you to drive and to become better, to practice harder, to get back to where we were, because I know I can. And I just need to keep working, keep grinding, and we'll get there eventually.
To recall some of those memories and just to remind people of where you have been and where you will be again. I say this with full confidence. What are some of those tournament memories for you over the years, the ones that you look back on with such fondness and which make you believe that, you know, you can do this again?
Sure, there's so many. I look back, some of the standout shots that I've hit in my career, probably the best ones, and that's when I played my best, was in the Czech Republic. I finished second. I went over on an invite and managed to come second there. There was a 9-iron that I hit into the 18th hole in the final round. I actually hit a very poor tee shot. I can remember it like it was yesterday. Hit a 5-iron, like half shanked it into the hazard on the right, and luckily it stayed up. I was on like a side slope, back left, pin into the wind, hit a 9-iron. Best shot I've ever hit, hands down. Like, hit it 6 foot behind the flag, straight over the top of the pin. And literally drew a blank. I read the putt, I asked my caddy, he said, just don't hit it too hard because it was downhill. I can't even remember what I did. All I know is it rammed into the back of the cup and went straight down, and that was the end of it. And those are the things that keep you wanting to progress and keep you wanting to go out and practice for moments like that, you know, where you can have a six-footer to make an extra 40,000 euros or whatever it is, you know. That's what we live for. I mean, normally it's for trophies, but, I mean, if you can't win, then the money's just as good, right? So, yeah, I mean, there's so many shots, like winning tournaments, but nothing can compare to the joy on one's face when you see them when I come home at night to see my missus and my lighty. That's the best for me.
And I think that emotion around the game of golf, we've seen it quite a few times. I remember some interviews earlier this year with Matt Fitzpatrick when he realized he hadn't made it through, I think it was Matt, but a couple of guys in tears this year. Because it is a very emotional game, and we tend to think, oh yeah, there's lots of money in golf and it doesn't really matter, but it goes well beyond that and it does really get deep inside you.
No, it does. I mean, I think the hardest journey for me has been the last 2.5 years, not because of the process and the kidney donation or whatever, for golf. I think I've made one cut in 2.5 years and it is absolutely killing me. Like, mentally and emotionally, I'm drained. Like, I don't know how much more I can put into this, but I just know that I have to keep going because it has to turn. I have to turn the corner, and once I do, there'll be no looking back.
And is the ability to, you know what, I've just missed a cut. I'm not playing this weekend. I'm seeing all of my mates going out. They're going to make money this weekend. I'm not. Is that still offset by, you know what, yes, it's horrible. Yes, I hate it, but I've got a context that I did not have before.
100%. You're 100% correct. I definitely do have the context, but I still have the hunger and the drive, and it still hurts. Trust me.
Like, I'm sure.
I actually did play a weekend. I played Ibotsi. Thankfully, the Friday was rained out for me, so I got some weekend action. Unfortunately, I didn't play any further than that, but No, it was good to tee it up on a Saturday again. So hopefully we'll play Saturday and a Sunday in the near future.
It will happen soon. And it will be a very popular occasion when it does, possibly not with all the guys you beat, but by and large with the community, because I think that's the other space that you will have drawn a lot of comfort from during a long and very challenging time, is that the golf community is a close-knit one. And from the professionals you play with to the Sunshine Tour team, Thomas and his team, to the guys who sponsor golf, the guys who are part of the industry, there are a lot of people who I know weren't just behind you, supporting you, cheering you on, but really willing good things to happen and for the story to turn out as it has.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I've walked a journey with some incredible, incredible people along the way. My golf day was so well supported at Lindauer by the tour, by Betway, by Lawrence Michael, by Larry Nestat. There's so many guys. I don't want to mention all of them because we'll sit here the whole afternoon. But to everyone that's helped me along my journey, they've just been absolutely incredible.
And I know that they have taken great delight and will continue to as this journey continues. And there is a lot of golf to come. But as we wrap up, when you look at this extraordinary story from first catching sight of this mythical American-based au pair and being told in no uncertain terms by your mate to keep your hands well clear, to persuading her marrying you would be a good thing, to finding out that you had this challenge and then watching this challenge magnify and somehow getting through it, I think suggested as much earlier with the golf, but whatever you do in golf, and there are great things still to come, nothing is going to be able to match not just the drama, but I think the sheer triumph of what you and Perversion Max have been through. And I think that is something to be so, so proud of.
Definitely, I agree 100%.
All right. When we sit down in 5 years' time, healthy, happy wife, we're in a good space there and looking even more so. Teenage son wreaking havoc and probably hitting his own golf ball 350 yards by then. But also Merrick back on tour. What will be a happy space for you when we're sitting down in 5 years' time? Neither of us looking any older, both of us looking slightly slimmer and more athletic. What are we looking back on over 5 years?
We're going to have a couple of trophies on this table here in the middle, and then we can talk about those wins and how well it felt, or how good it felt getting there.
I think there's going to be a very special speech when that first one is won, and I think there might be a tear or two and maybe some from you as well.
100%.
Merrick, congratulations on everything you've been through. It's a really, really tough journey, but you have inspired, I think, a lot more people than you realize and will continue to. And for those of you out there who are listening, perhaps watching, here is somebody who's taken on a really tough situation with Pavesh, with Max, and come through with a lot of grit, a lot of fortitude, and a lot of belief. Merrick, it's so heartwarming to see where you guys are now. Give Pavesh a huge hug. Tell her brother that his sister made a very good choice, as I think the whole family will know now. And I am genuinely looking forward to that trophy being aloft and seeing the beaming smile of Pavesh and the beaming smile of Max and the rest of the family cheering you on as the golf stories play catch up with the incredible life story that you have.
Thank you so much, Dan. It's been an absolute pleasure.
There we go. Sunshine Tour golfer, DP World Tour golfer, and the man who met the gorgeous Pavesh, fell in love, discovered an unexpected and horrible challenge, but gave the kidney that has saved her life, put them back together on a far happier space as a family, and now has him ready to go forth and conquer the golf world. And you heard it here first on The Dan Nicholls Show. Merrick Bremner has got many tournaments yet to win.
You're listening to The Dan Nicholls Show.